And welcome to part two of your 2016 reading. By the way, that music is by Greg Schofield, a friend and sometimes client of mine who has got a cool little thing going with music. So it's in a little bit different style than the Daniels and I usually come up with, but I thought I would just get a little other musical influence. He's worked for us a couple of other times, and I like what he does. All right, so thank you, Greg. Let's talk about the 12th house. The 12th house of your chart is Capricorn. That is the sign right before your sign. And you have an especially close relationship to the 12th house because both Aquarius and Capricorn are, in classical astrology, ruled by Saturn. I'm aware that in modern astrology, most astrologers consider Uranus to be the ruler of the sign Aquarius. And I consider Uranus to be the ruler of Aquarius, kind of like I consider Chiron to be the ruler of Virgo, which is not exactly. There are some strong associations between Uranus and Aquarius, but I think to really understand both Aquarius and Saturn, it's necessary to frame them in the context of one another. So we'll come back to the Uranus thing, because that does show up in your chart. But for now, the idea that your 12th house and your first house, that is to say Cap and Aquarius, have a planet in common is really important because it means that all of the things that are represented by the 12th house can be rather out front and ordinary for you. And here are some of what they are. First of all, the 12th house acts like a hidden dimension of consciousness that you cannot always penetrate into. The most easily recognized example of the 12th house is a dream. The dream seems incredibly real when you're in it. It can kind of be present when you first wake up, and then it has a way of fading out and maybe leaving behind a memory or a feeling, but not being especially easy to find your way back into. And so that sensation of an experience that seemed real, but you can't find your way back into it, is a typical experience of the 12th house. And another is that it contains things like our ancestral memory. The memories that we bring with us into this life that typically are conveyed either by karma or by DNA can also be products of the 12th house. And that karma and DNA also includes environmental factors that are often not that well accounted for. And it happens that you have a lot of activity in Capricorn in your 12th house right now. And that means that a lot is being stirred up of past influences. And the theme of the past is contained in the 12th because the 12th is sort of like a drainage basin that karma and experience are drained into and have a way of disappearing. You know how when you see someone, you think, wow, that person's really not dealing with their stuff. And they think, what do you mean? Well, of course I'm dealing with. That's 12th house. You can see what they're not addressing, whatever it might be, family stuff or grief or consequences of the past, but they might feel like, nah, no biggie. Okay. However, for you, you have had some profound activity in the 12th house going back to 2008 when Pluto entered Capricorn. And one of the best ways to get my perspective on this is to find the link. I'll actually make it pretty obvious. Linked to past annuals. And I don't want to make my staff work to dig up all the Aquarius readings, but we'll make the link to the annuals available. And if you go back to around 2007, and the 2008 annuals, right around then, I would say the years 7, 8, 9, and 10, that I recall were the years I was doing the most analysis of the ancestral material connected to Pluto in Capricorn. It was kind of the central theme of Aquarius for a while, and I did my best to introduce my readers and clients to that theme, and it will be worth going back and researching. And the reason for that is because now there have been so many transits to Pluto, particularly in the past few weeks, where Mercury was dancing around Pluto as part of the Mercury retrograde process. That will continue next December when Mercury stations retrograde conjunct Pluto. And in addition, over the past few weeks, Venus has been in Capricorn, and recently over the past weekend, just ahead of the new moon, a couple of days before the new moon, made a conjunction to Pluto. And so in addition to Pluto being there, kind of opening up a lot of boxes in the attic, there have been some personal planets mingled in, and the personal planets make the information more visceral. It's you feel it, you think it, you emote it, you want to talk about it. The experience of, say, for example, Mercury plus Venus in Capricorn is much more visceral than just Pluto in Capricorn. So it's as if the inner planets are making the experience of the outer planet, Pluto, real. Now, just to sum up a little bit, one of the ways I was describing Pluto in Capricorn in the beginning of the transit is kind of like you find a secret stairway in your home or your apartment. Let's say you like step out your front door and you're into the corridor, or you open up a closet, and instead of there being a closet, there's a staircase that goes up, and you go to the top of the staircase, and you see there's a door with a doorknob, and of course you put your hand on the doorknob to see if the knob will turn, and that is a it's an inviting thing. The 12th is enticing, and any time you have a way in there, generally, most people will take it. And so you open the door, and you see this long corridor. And it's almost like a hotel corridor, only instead of there being hotel rooms, each one of those doors leads to the bedroom of your ancestors. All those grandparents and uncles and aunts and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents going all the way back, and the part of the corridor closest to where you emerged are the more immediate relatives, people that you may have known in the past or that you currently know. And as you walk further down the corridor, you go deeper and deeper back in time, and you encounter their private spaces, one after the next. And as you walk down that corridor, you have the option to open the door and to see who and what is in there. And so the process of Pluto going through Capricorn, through your solar 12th house, or if you're Aquarius rising, your 12th house, has been this kind of invitation into the 12th house, and the process of opening up those doors one at a time and facing the contents of those rooms. Now, this can happen in such a way that you're not really thinking about it much, or it can happen in such a way where you get very curious and you start to do things like go to ancestry.com or literally go up into the attic and find the stuff of the people of the past. In some homes, this is still accessible. The trousseaus or the trunks or so forth, maybe down in the basement, are still kept, and it's possible to see this. It's possible that some of their books and their letters are available. And I would suggest following any calling you have to go deeper into what you might think of as the business, the personal business of these people who were not you, but yet you contain their instruction sets. You contain what you inherited from them. And there is what you might think of as an evolutionary necessity of described by Pluto moving through the 12th to find what is hidden. And the repeated conjunctions of Mercury to Pluto, there have been four since December. There was one on December the 19th, I believe, and then there were three subsequent ones in the process of Mercury stationing direct about 2 weeks ago. And then the added reminder of a Mercury station retrograde conjunct Pluto in less than a year. And so this is going on. And the combination of Mercury and Pluto is saying, be aware of what is typically an unconscious process. Venus is also saying, be aware of how you feel about an unconscious process. So Mercury is more saying, here's what you need to be sentient about. Here's what you need to not relegate to the quote-unquote unconscious. Mercury is just saying, be normally conscious. And Venus is saying, take this on the level of how you experience this emotionally. And notably, I believe it was on Friday night when Venus and Pluto made their exact conjunction. The moon was also in Capricorn in preparation for the new moon in Aquarius, approximately 48, a little more hours later. And so it's as if contained in this new moon, there was the triple conjunction of Venus and the moon and Pluto in Capricorn. And so you're taking this secret inner life and the secret inner contents of the 12th house, of your dreams, of your feelings about them all into your waking life. Now, what is vital to remember is that there are modes of projection of that 12th house material. And one of the most common ways that the 12th house is not properly addressed is that it is projected out into the environment. And by that, I mean it either manifests in the social dynamics of the people who are around you and how you relate to them, the group dynamics, in a similar way that group therapy has a way of replicating past unconscious family dynamics, and then they become conscious, you become aware of them, or in one-on-one relationships. It is the easiest way to kind of attempt to move the material of the 12th house, is that it shows up in your one-on-one dynamics with lovers and with partners. And so the thing to recognize is that your group dynamics, as I call them in the first section, may be presenting you with a kind of an ancestral map. And it would be good to really know who these people are and what they are, representing. And to remember that the, you know, superficial level of, oh, this person's my boss, this person's my employee, merely is a statement of symbology. They are symbols. They are not the actual root of anything. They're almost like puppets in the show that are being guided by the inner hand, and the inner hand is coming out of the 12th house. Similarly, with the 7th, a house with unusually similar properties to the 12th, right? People don't really, this has not been well mapped out, but the 7th above the horizon, the house right above the western horizon, tends to mirror the 12th house also right above the horizon, only it's the eastern horizon. It's kind of like a Rorschach test. You put some ink on the paper and then you fold the paper in half. Well, when you do, the 7th, the house of your marriage and partnership relationships, is going to have a kind of a mirror image of what's contained in the much less alert, awake, and aware region of the 12th house. And so one of the ways to get the material out of the 12th is to have it dramatized in our interpersonal relationships or in our group dynamics. I'm suggesting you cut this loop short and that you go into the 12th house on your own. You enter the territory of the 12th house and you spend time in there and you hang out, you might say, with all of the things that are in there. This is one reason why I've suggested that it's going to be very helpful to understand what's motivating you. To understand what's motivating you, well, one place to look is to go into the 12th house, to feel what it feels like in there. The easiest way into the 12th is dream experiences, and then there's kind of a cascading list of other things you can do to gain access to the 12th. One of them might be to make art. Another might be to make music. A whole tier of 12th house experiences involve entering the matrix with the use of some substance, or perhaps with meditation, very similar thing. For you, you could be transported into the 12th house using music, because music is such an important tool for you right now. And with music, I would suggest that experiences of music you have not heard before, rather than the tried and true things that are representative of emotional realities with which you are familiar. Rather, instead, experiment with emotional realities that you are not familiar with, so that you can be taken into new inner territory. And I suggest you go where it feels a little weird and a little bit uncomfortable, because in doing that, in engaging with things like fear and with guilt and with shame, it is easy to start to see what is motivating you on a deeper level. Okay, so there's different ways to engage that, but I would reiterate a caution again that owing to planetary rulerships, for example, your 12th Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. That's in the 11th. That's right out where everyone can see it, right where it's going to have an influence on your group dynamics. And Mars, which is exalted in Capricorn, so it is also a representative of, it is a kind of a co-ruler of Capricorn. That's in your 10th house. That will also tend to manifest in a similar way with group dynamics where you assert control, power, and authority. And this chart is just basically begging to have those projections of power and authority called back and to really work your entire life from the inside out. Now, we're talking about something that's on the level of shamanic experience here, but it's not that big of a deal, really. All it's calling for is a very high degree of self-awareness. And when you are witnessing anything going on around you, just to ask a simple question: what is this saying about my inner dynamics? It's not like you have to blame yourself for what's going on, or blame yourself for someone giving you a hard time or spazzing out at you, but rather to call that projection back in and ask yourself, if it does represent something or someone inside you or someone associated with your past, because the 12th can have that. So again, pulling in projections, calling back in outer experiences and seeing what they represent on the inside. Vitally helpful to track your dreams in doing this, particularly the feeling of your dreams, and to recognize that, quite unlike life on the kind of A1 level, the sentient level of, you know, oh, this person works next to me and so forth, this person is my boss, this person is my employee, when you look at a dream, everything in the dream is you. So if you dream of a coworker, colleague, or friend in a dream, that symbol is a representative of you. And one of the ways to work with dreams is to tell the story in the first person of a diversity of symbols from the dream, right? Let's say someone, a friend, appears in the dream. Become that person and tell the whole dream from their viewpoint. If you dream of a teacup on the table, one way to begin the telling of the dream is to say, I'm a teacup, I'm on the desk, I'm green, I was found in Nova Scotia, I represent the person who made me, I'm full of water, I have the water here, because Eric's doing an astrology reading, and needs to have water on the table and so forth. Tell the dream from the viewpoint of the symbol in the dream in the first person, using I to get a feeling of what the dream is about. I learned this method from Joe. It's called the Gestalt Dream Method, and I have never seen a dream method unravel the message, not the meaning, the message of a dream better than the Gestalt Dream Method. Let's talk about Pisces, the second house in your chart. Remember, when we begin kind of with Aquarius, that's the sun sign part of it, but then every other sign falls into its place going around the wheel. And so with Aquarius on the first, that puts Pisces on the second. And Pisces on the second is an interesting picture of self-esteem. One thing to remember about Pisces is it's going to have a little resonance to the 12th house. It's going to have that sense of lack of certainty and a bit of a dreamy quality and there being a kind of an ambiguity and also some challenges getting direct access to what's going on in that house because it's Pisces. Now you have a lot of planets in Pisces. For example, there is Nessus, there is Ceres, there is Neptune, there's Chiron, there's Borsisi, there's Dionysus. So there's a lot of planets, whatever they might be, whatever they might represent, and they represent a broad spectrum of things, there are planets there. And so what this is doing is creating a, or at least illustrating, a time in your life when the question of your self-value is high on the list of priorities. In fact, I would suggest that it is the most important question that you have right now, because in a way, one's value, one's self-value, is the thing that mediates everything else. It doesn't really matter so much what you say or kind of project into the world as much as it matters what's actually going on in your inner sense of what is valuable and what is not. Your inner sense of what you are made of. And that we find in the second house. And having Pisces there suggests a lot more emotionally connected person than any description of Aquarius that I've ever read would have us think. There's a sense of vulnerability. There is a, rather than dominantly mental approach, there is a dominantly emotional approach to existence. And there's the sensation of how you feel and what you believe being the most important resources that dominate your reality, that are, for the most part, the thing that you engage with the world with and the thing that you transact with the world. And so this can have a way of really dominating your reality. And you've got a lot of planets there right now, and a lot of them are outer planets, the gods of change in certain ways. And so there is a profound calling to understand how you feel about yourself and what you feel your resources are. Anyone having Pisces on the second can have a sense of a deficit of self-esteem, a sense of feeling invisible, a sense of feeling not valued, and a sense also quite possibly of faking it, because Pisces can have that feeling of like, well, this is all an illusion. It doesn't really matter what's true. What matters is the illusion, and that is not itself really true, but there can be that sensation that of a lack of tangible substance. The thing is that substance in the style of Pisces is going to be some form of etheric or spiritual substance. It's therefore going to be transactable more on the level of faith. It's not exactly like you're the kind of person who can say, well, I own so much, and therefore I'm a special person. You'll be more likely to say, I have a well of creativity, and therefore I am a special person. I can ask a question inwardly and get a response, and that's a resource that I have. So your resources, both material and inner, are likely to all skew away from the material side of things. And Pisces very well represents the aspect of you that's just not interested in all of this materialistic obsession that the world is so concerned with. But in exchange for that, you have to deal with a lot of legacy material. You are deeply enmeshed in a kind of a world of mirrors where so much has collected over time, and where once you enter that world, it's very difficult to see what's real and what's not, particularly because it's so driven by belief. Now, how do you sort this out? I'll say it's going to be difficult to sort it out psychologically. It's going to be difficult to sort it out, say, for example, in therapy. The most direct way to sort it out is likely to be some form of artistic expression, that art would be your therapy. The beauty that you create gives you an experience of that beauty. And in addition, it gives you the kind of demonstration of what you're made of, because you can't make anything that is that much unlike yourself. And so the deeper you feel, and then the deeper you express your feelings into some tangible form, and this is important, that whether that form be photography, music, art, writing, journaling of some kind, but more leaning toward things that have a result that you can observe and share. The beauty of a song is you can play it for someone. The beauty of a painting is that it embodies something you're feeling, and you can share it with someone. And so in this way, you exit from the Hall of Mirrors, and you move into a kind of an energy field where there's more responsiveness. Now, a lot of what's going on in Pisces indicates that you are in a deep process of healing self-esteem questions, which likely come from either from birth or long before birth. There are some ancestral issues in there. There are things that go all the way back, for example, through the line of women or through the line of men or through both lineages, both parents, and so forth. And it will help you to know what they are, and to know or at least to try to observe the influence that certain past experiences going all the way back have had on you. And the time has come for those to come to the surface. Now, there's strong influences of things coming to the surface. There's Chiron that's present, that's been there for about 5 years. There's Nessus, which is a more recent entry. Both Chiron and Nessus are centaur planets, and they are sending you messages practically every hour of the day to heal your self-esteem, to ask yourself, what is underneath any feelings you have about yourself? And usually when we talk about healing self-esteem, we're talking about healing some form of doubt or guilt or sense of not belonging. Otherwise, you wouldn't need to heal it. And so the presence of centaurs is a focused, kind of magnified, laser-like interaction with the contents of this house. But at the same time, there are influences that are what you might think of as kind of deceptive influences that are leading you to the possibility of being in denial of these things you're observing with the assistance of the centaurs. And so there may be some tension. You may come to a realization and understanding with yourself, and then the next day decide that's not true. And so it helps to be mindful of this process unfolding, to pay attention to the process unfolding, and to see the ways in which you experience the dualism of Pisces and the ambiguity that you might feel about yourself, the tension of things going back and forth between one set of feelings about yourself and another set of feelings about yourself, and the ways in which you might accept one or the other. I think the important thing with Pisces is you keep expressing, and that you keep exploring through the process of expression rather than holding back. And this would be especially true in any moment of self-doubt. I would also encourage you to notice if you ever try to convince yourself of something. Are you trying to convince yourself you really are creative? Do you feel your mind rationalizing? Are you convincing yourself you're a good person? Do you feel your mind rationalizing that? And get a sense of when you're doing this and understanding what the hamster that is turning that particular hamster wheel actually is. There's a lot going on in this house that has to do with the beliefs that you have seeming to dictate reality. And there's so much you can do, and only so much you can do, by consciously believing something else. But ultimately, you do have to have faith in yourself. But I would point out that faith is going on a much deeper level than belief. Belief is very much a superficial thing. It is fragile. It does not last, and it can change. Faith is much deeper. Now, there's something indicated that is, I think, worth looking at, which is that the classical ruler of Pisces, being Jupiter, is in your eighth house. So the house of your resources is Pisces. The house of shared resources, house eight, is Virgo. Virgo is a very important house for you because one of the things that you need to be doing is fully integrating your experiences and kind of understanding what you feel, think, and then go through in a way that is fully integrated. And one of the ways you do that is to use Virgo. In addition, the ruler of Pisces, your personal resources, is in Virgo. So it's in its opposite place, and it is in dialogue with a lot of other planets. And so there is here the possibility of basically handing off the question of self-esteem to someone else. That someone else might be a lover. It might be an authority figure of some kind. It might be a parental figure of some kind. But it is as if your self-esteem is invested in somewhere else. And I know this is a common thing that people do, is we tend to invest our self-esteem outside of ourselves. But I would propose here that this is a very significant thing to notice right now. The ways in which you are basically leaving it to others to reflect your self-worth back to you, to recognize there is some potential peril here, but also if you are able to proceed with this gently, nice and easy, it's also possible that you can get a kind of a a feedback dynamic going where you are actually gaining insights from others, where you are actually learning things from others about yourself and through your relationship to them. I would say, though, that it is a fine line between that and giving away your power. And the thing that you really don't want to do is you don't want to give away your power. And so I would follow all roads back to yourself. I would allow the transaction of kind of having your self-esteem be a factor in a relationship, which might be a business relationship, it might be a marital relationship, it might be a lover, and then allow that to guide you back to some internal reality, to some internal experience, and get the feeling of what is present in that internal experience, right? So all roads lead back to you. Everything around you can be read as some kind of a symbol of what is going on inside of you. It is not that you're causing these things. It is that your perception right now is unusually revelatory of the inner contents of your inner reality. And everything about your life is about the contents of your inner reality right now, because there is so much happening in these three crucial houses, 12, Capricorn, 1, Aquarius, and 2, Pisces. I have more to say about the modern ruler and of your sign, that being Uranus and what's going on there, but I do need to take a break. I think we've covered quite a bit of material in these minutes that have gone by, and so I will catch you with the story about Uranus in the astrology afterthoughts portion of the third section. All right. Thanks for listening. Bless and bye for now.